We continue the Shi'ur in Gemara. The Gemara says, there's a pasuk in the Torah which says, Hashem commands the Jews, you shall not make before me anything resembling my closest servants in heaven. Also, the Gemara says, you shall not make anything resembling the most important parts of the Beit HaMikdash. The most important parts of the Beit HaMikdash refer to the Shulchan, the actual table that was used in the Beit HaMikdash, on which the Chavot were kept, the form of the hall in the Beit HaMikdash, and the Menorah, especially the Menorah in the Beit HaMikdash. In the Beit HaMikdash contained seven containers for oil, seven sections. And these seven sections, this number is reserved only for the menorah and the Beit HaMikdash. No person can ever make a menorah, whether it is of metal of any kind, metal, silver, gold, any type. And some maintain that even wood is forbidden, the menorah of wood, though the one on the Beit HaMikdash was of metal, of gold. But any menorah of seven candles is forbidden for any Jew to possess. Now that number represented the 7 days of the week, the middle candle that burned straight upwards, represented the Shabbat. The three on both sides represent the 3 days of the week before Shabbat and after Shabbat, which are part of the week. This menorah is the one on the Beit HaMikdash. A person could make a menorah five candles, six, eight, any number, but seven. That is a forbidden number. Now, what is meant by the servants of Hashem in heaven? The Mekaveh, this is something that the Gemara speaks about, which we do not have much of an understanding of. What is meant by this, we only know that this is rule, law. Mekaveh, the carriage or the coach, angels in heaven that carry the Kedusha in heaven, consist of four types. One, the form of an eagle. Second, the form of a lion. The third, the form of an ox. The fourth, the form of a human being. These four faces. And therefore, since these are the four faces in the heavenly coach, as it's called, Merkavah, that's why the letter says that no person is permitted to have any figure of these four. This certainly does not matter whether the figure is made of metal or whether it's made of ivory or jade or wood or anything. These four figures are forbidden. Figure of a lion, the figure of an eagle, figure of an ox, or the figure of a human being are all forbidden. Now, in addition, of course, the sun and the moon, figures of the sun and the moon too, will serve in the heavens. These two are forbidden. But there's one point, though, that when we say these figures are forbidden, we mean they are forbidden not as paintings, not as pictures or portraits. They are forbidden only when they are three-dimensional, when they are sculptured, carved out, three dimensions. Then and only then are these four figures forbidden. So that the Gemara says, if a person does have one of these figures, they cannot dispose of it, that he should disfigure it, and it becomes kasher. Disfigure it means to mar the face of either one of these four figures. Mar the face means to spoil, take off a bit of the nose, the tip of the nose, the eyes, the lips, and so on. But then it is permissible to keep it, maintain it. Otherwise, this is an absolute law in the Gemara. law of the Torah that it is forbidden for a person to keep any of these figures, and this is a law that Yemeda learns from a pasuk in the Torah. That's how far back this goes, how deep this law is. The Yemeda says that, as we discussed at length, during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the Jewish calendar was decided not by a ready-made calendar, but by the first day of the month, the Shchodesh. And when we knew when the first day of the month was, we could then know when the holidays come out. If we know it's the first day of the month of Nisan, 15 days later is Pesach. First day of the month of Tishrei, that day is Rosh Hashanah. And automatically, the 10th day will be Yom Kippur. Now, how did we determine the first day of the month? Only when there were two witnesses to testify that they saw the birth of the new moon. They saw a new moon come out. The old moon, as we explain in detail, the old moon disappears after a period of 29 days, 12 hours, 1,080ths of an hour, about 44 minutes, or 29 and a half days is the length of life of a moon in its full cycle. And when the moon finally disappears, there's a period of 6 to 12 hours when there is no moon seen whatsoever. It's completely dark, and then we see the birth of a new moon. We see the other side of the moon come out, and its revolution, light comes out. We see just this tiny, thin crescent of a moon. And the moon rises in the west when it's first born. At the end of the month, it sets in the east, which means that we see it in its final stage in the east. That's when it's down to the last tiny crescent too. We see it again rising in the west as a new moon. The Yemeda says now that since this is not a minor item, this is extremely important because most of the laws of the Torah are dependent upon this actual seeing of the moon. All the holidays, Pesach is not just the holidays, the law of Chametz, Matzah, the Seder, the entire holiday, Shavuot, Sukkot, sitting in the Sukkah, Lulav, Yitrog, Rosh Hashanah, Kippur, fasting on Kippur. This is all determined by time when the month has started. So we must be sure that the month starts on the right day. The Yemeda says something happened once and two witnesses came before the rabbis and they said, we saw the moon on this day and the next night it was missing. The moon was gone. So one rabbi said, these are false witnesses. This is like saying we saw a woman give birth, and the next day we saw her pregnant in the 9th month. How can that be possible? How can you say the moon gave birth, the new moon was born, and then you say that there's no moon left, which means that the moon had just completed its cycle and it wasn't there anymore? These witnesses are false. We cannot accept the testimony. So therefore, which means that today, the day they claim they saw the moon, that's not the first day of the month. The first day of the month is the next day. Rabbi Gamliel, the chief rabbi, the Nasi of the Sanhedrin, said, I accept the testimony. They didn't see the moon the next night. It's because of extenuating circumstances. For some reason, the moon might have been hidden. But we don't go by what we have not seen. We go by the fact that two witnesses testified to the fact that they saw the moon. We must declare this day as Rosh Chodesh. This happened to be the month of Tishrei. Today is Rosh Hashanah. What's important about it is, 10 days from today is Yom Kippur, the holiest day of the year, holiest holiday of the year, and a fast day. 10 days from today, Rabbi Yehoshua, who had refused to accept this testimony of the witnesses, said, my opinion, my decision, my positive is that tomorrow is the first day of the month. 10 days from today is Erev Yom Kippur. It's a mitzvah to eat. And the next day is Kippur. What the Leo considers the day after Kippur, I consider Kippur. Rabbi Eliyahu, the chief rabbi, heard about this. He sent a message to Rabbi Yeshua. This message, he said, I hereby decree, I order you, with the authority that I possess as chief rabbi, that on that day that you maintain is Yom Kippur, I order you to come to visit me, carry your cane, your walking stick, and your wallet with you when you come. Visit me on that day. Appear before me, carry your cane and your wallet with money in it. This means you think it's Kippur, desecrate that day. Rabbi Yeshua was extremely upset. Imagine, he didn't know what to do. Should he obey Rabbi Gamliel? This would mean his opinion, he's going to break Yom Kippur. He's going to have to carry money on Kippur and travel and not be able to fast on Kippur itself. Should he disobey him, should he keep Yom Kippur that day, this means he's going to disobey the order of the chief rabbi of the Jews. What should he do? So he went to two rabbis to ask their opinion. He came to Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, and he asked him, praise the king of Rabbi Akiva. First one he asked Rabbi Akiva. Akiva saw him suffering, felt so badly. And Akiva said to him, I will appease your mind. Now, your mind, your opinion, you feel you're right. You feel that 11th day is Yom Kippur. You're positive about it, right? But I'll tell you this. The Torah says, Ele Mo'adei Hashem. These are the holidays of Hashem. Asher Tigru'u Otam, which you should announce. You meaning the chief rabbi of the Jews. He said, head it in. Now, it says, Asher Tigru'u, which you should announce, Atem you. It says twice the word you. And when it says Asher Tigru'u Otam means them. The word Otam, though, is spelled without the back, which means it's read Atem you. Now, when the Torah writes something spelled in a manner where it could be taken as a different word, there's a reason for it. Mikiva said, this means to teach us, you are the one to announce it. And you meaning, no matter what reason you have, if you announce the wrong day, well, it's not that holiday, you say this is the holiday, speaking to the Sanhedrin, to the chief rabbi of the Sanhedrin, Hashem says, I accept it as the holiday of Hashem. You say today is Rosh Hashanah, I will judge the world today. If you say tomorrow is Rosh Hashanah, I will wait until you say it's Rosh Hashanah. Not only that, I'll even change the nature of the world. I'll even change the rules for you. For example, if you say today is Rosh Hashanah, it means that it's a new year. A boy becomes 13 on this day, for example, and you say today is Rosh Hashanah, on this day, if he commits murder, he gets a death penalty. If you say tomorrow is Rosh Hashanah, the new year starts tomorrow, and it means he becomes 13 tomorrow, not today, and today he commits murder, he goes free. He's not 13 yet. So this boy's life is affected by your decision, not the decision of heaven. So strong, so great is the authority given to the chief rabbi from heaven. So that, the Akiva said, this we understand, but the word Atem you means that not only do you have that authority, but it says twice you that even if you make a mistake, even if the truth is that the moon might have come out and you made a mistake and didn't see it, and you declared today as the day of the first of the month when it isn't so, Hashem still accepts it as so. And more than that, even if for some reason you deliberately, not accidentally or by error, deliberately declared today as being Rosh Chodesh instead of tomorrow, or tomorrow instead of today, where you know that today is, Hashem still accepts that, because the power of the calendar, the holidays, the Shchodesh was given to the Sanhedrin. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva said to Yeshua, don't worry about it. Leo, chief rabbi, said, 10 days from today is Kippur. You know that 11 days from today is Kippur. Disregard what you know. Here you have the Torah law, which says that Leo is right as chief rabbi. So, keep the 10th day. 11th day, go to him with your money and your cane and don't worry, because you know that according to heaven, it's not Kippur anymore. He heard this and he went to Rabbi Dosa. He had a second opinion. Rabbi Dosa said, what are you in doubt about? You know the law that Akiva said, that certainly the power, the authority lies with the chief rabbi. But of course, anyone knows it's a clear statement in the Torah. But what's bothering you? I know what's bothering you. You think that perhaps this chief rabbi of ours is, as Mishanel, not qualified. Maybe he's not that much learned. Maybe you feel that you're much more learned than he is. And therefore, you doubt whether he has the authority, whether heaven grants him the authority over all the other rabbis. After we have Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Dosa, the others, who knows if Rabbi Gamliel, the chief rabbi, has this authority given to him from heaven to overrule all the other rabbis, all the Jews in the world. This I will answer you. You find that in the Chumash it says that Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, and it says he spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu and to Aharon for a group. They all went up, Moshe Rabbeinu, Aharon, Aharon's two sons, Nadab and Avihu, and the 70 elders of the Jews. So until then, we have the names listed. Moshe Rabbeinu, Aharon HaKohen, Nadab, Avihu, 70 elders of the Jews, no names given to them. Why does the Torah say 70 elders without names? Completely anonymous 70 people, 70 rabbis of the Jews. Why didn't the Torah explicitly list their names? Teach us that in the future, whatever we have, any rabbis who are leaders, chief rabbis, their names don't count. Just as these 70 were unnamed, there's no name necessary for the future rabbis. They are in the same category as these 70 elders, as Moshe Rabbeinu. Every chief rabbi in his generation, regardless who he is the same authority as Moshe Rabbeinu in his time. And therefore, if you have doubts as to the authority of Rabbi Eliel, look at these 70 chief rabbis, these 70 elders at the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. They were unnamed, names are not listed, to teach us that in our generation, or in all times, the chief rabbi has this same authority, no matter what his name is, no matter who he is. If he is appointed as chief rabbi, he has the authority. Therefore, without question, what the Leo said, the date that he stipulated as the day for Kippur, that is a day that is accepted in heaven. Our opinions do not count. Heaven accepts the Leo's opinion, and that is Kippur. Accept that day, the following day that you thought was Kippur, disregard that day completely and go to the Galil, carry your cane and your money without fear. Rabbi Natan Zal adds a very vital point here, extremely vital point. And the Gemara says here that all chief rabbis at their time are like Moshe Rabbeinu at his time, and therefore the Galil had the authority to determine when Yom Kippur is. And Tezel says, here we can answer a very vital question, a deep question. The Jews came to Har Sinai, Mount Sinai. They had just experienced the greatest miracles of all time in history. They had seen the 10 plagues in Egypt. They had seen the miracles at the Red Sea, the dividing of the waters. Miracles were brought to their eyes, the Egyptians drowning. And then coming through the wilderness to Mount Sinai, and at Mount Sinai they saw even still more. They heard the voice of Hashem. How is that possible, logically, that at a time like that, suddenly these Jews who had seen so much should go for something as silly as a golden calf? Leave everything they'd seen before and go to worship a golden calf. Very strange for the logic of people who were so educated and so advanced mentally. They were considered the daughter, they are the wisest people of all time. They were zochet to have as their rabbi Moshe Rabbeinu himself. How can they fault something like this, the golden calf, which did nothing for them? Well, until then, they'd see such miracles of Hashem. I mean, that tells us the answer. We see, of course, the Gemara tells us that what happened, Moshe Rabbeinu went to heaven for 40 days and 40 nights. Then, when it was over, they wouldn't have left. They wouldn't have had any doubts. But the Satan misled them. The Satan created a mirage, a vision, for all Jews to see. On top of the mountain, they could see a coffin with Moshe Rabbeinu lying in it. This was an image the Satan created. He gave them the impression that Moshe Rabbeinu has passed away. They no longer have a leader. They must have a new leader. Now, what did this bring out in them suddenly? Suddenly, they all said, Moshe Rabbeinu has passed away. He was the only one who was so great, so holy, the only rabbi we could follow. He is gone. We no longer have a rabbi. We no longer have a leader. We no longer have connections, any more association with the Kedusha as before. Therefore, they've got to go to the other extreme. Why is this so? Because the fact is, first, these people were ones who until then, mind you, until then, if you follow the chronological order of the Torah, you find that these same people, before this vision they had seen in their travel through the wilderness for these 49 days, they had come upon certain places where they rose up and rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu, crying, they were ready to kill him, to slay him, crying, why did you take us out of Egypt and bring us into this wilderness? The actual revolution against Moshe Rabbeinu, when they degraded him, disregarded him as a leader, showing no respect at all, completely rebellious. Now, when they saw he had passed away, suddenly they said, Moshe Rabbeinu, HaKadosh, holy rabbi, by all bowed to this coffin as the greatest holy person that ever existed. This shows us that a tzaddik is recognized as a tzaddik by all when, after his istalkut, when he passes away. Once a tzaddik passes away, nobody argues about how great he was. Everyone admits he was a very holy tzaddik. Without question, nobody will say a word against it, and they'll actually believe it. Or fully believe in the Kedusha, the holiness of this tzaddik. Let's come to a closer era, the era of Bnei HaKadosh, the Rizal, who was the father of Kabbalah. The Rizal was so great, as it is written in the Seferim, as is brought in his own Seferim, and as everyone, all later Seferim, testified to, that the Rizal had the powers of visiting heaven at will, with such simplicity that it was like we go to a regular yeshiva to learn. Let's say he went to visit the yeshiva of Rabbi Akiva, the yeshiva of Moshe Rabbeinu in heaven, the yeshiva of Mashiach. This is all brought to the Sefer. And there he learned all the secrets of Kabbalah and returned with that. These all had the power of seeing every soul on each person buried in the cemetery and speaking to that person. He got to the cemetery to speak to each person at the cemetery and know his whole life history. He can look at a person, look at a person's forehead, and be able to see every single act that person ever committed in his lifetime. The Rizal could look at anything in the world, animal, bird, insect, rock, and know the origin of this item. Know what kind of a Gilgul this thing is. If a person came back as a Gilgul of an animal, Rizal could speak to the soul in that animal and discuss the person's previous sins, discuss about how to go about correcting. All these were the powers of the Rizal. These are many, many more. No one could compare to the Rizal this time. And yet the fact was that during the Rizal's lifetime, there was a tremendous drive against the Rizal. Very few believed in him, very few followed him. It was after the Rizal, the Stalkus, that everyone began to speak of the Ari HaKadosh, the Holy Lion. To this day, Ari HaKadosh is accepted by all. The Shulchan Aruch is filled with the Minhag HaRizal. Everyone, Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, every Jew in the world respects the word Minhag HaRizal. HaRizal, the Holy Lion, the greatest Tzaddik of the past centuries, but not during his lifetime. This was only after his passing. 200 years later, the Baal Shem Tov came, father of Chassidut. Chassidim, the time of Baal Shem Tov, the opposition was so great to him that they considered him Ches V'Shalom and Apikoris. Who did it? The biggest rabbis at that time. Biggest rabbis, Ari Shulchan Aruch, at that time, banded together, united, with an attempt to put the Baal Shem Tov in Cherem. So great was the opposition against Baal Shem Tov at that time. Until later years, the Baal Shem Tov, too, showed miracles as great as the Rizal, when he was Nistalek, all of a sudden, the Baal Shem Tov, the name of Baal Shem Tov became a common name used in all Hebrew classes, in all Jewish homes, a name that's used to symbolize one who is a holy person, a heavenly person, and it was stories told about Hashem Tov more than any other individual in history. Every person respects the memory of Hashem Tov and regards the Hashem Tov as an Ish Elokim, a heavenly person. But again, not during his lifetime. This was only after his lifetime. Which proves, Rabbi Natan Zell says, that a person's faith in a tzaddik after tzaddik passes away is no proof of his having faith. The test of a person's faith is during the tzaddik's lifetime. Then when the Satan tries to bring out, to force a lack of faith, then you have to battle and show your faith in the tzaddik. That's why when Moshe Rabbeinu was nistalek, all of a sudden all the Jews said, Moshe Rabbeinu, the holiest rabbi, and everyone accepted without a question or doubt. No one said a word against him anymore. This was the holy tzaddik, and there's no one like him. They turned away. What were they supposed to have done? They were supposed to go directly to the tzaddik of their time, the leader, go to Yehoshua, who was the leader after Moshe Rabbeinu, if they thought he had passed away. What did Yehoshua say? You are our rabbi now. Teach us, we will follow. This was their test of faith. This they did not do because they did not have that faith in a tzaddik. This resulted in no faith in Hashem. And these two must go together. Ve'yaminu b'Hashem u'Moshe Avdo, emunah in Hashem u'Moshe Rabbeinu, is one. You cannot separate those two. And this is in every generation. Therefore, the Gemara says here that the lesson is, Rabbi Eliel was the chief rabbi at that time, he must be obeyed as implicitly as Moshe Rabbeinu in his time. What did Rabbi Yeshua do? On the day after Yom Kippur, which according to his calculations was Yom Kippur, he came to Rabbi Eliel's home, walked in with his walking stick, his cane, and his wallet of money. Rabbi Eliel saw him, Rabbi Eliel stood up for him, he kissed him on his forehead, and he said, come in peace, my rabbi and my student. My rabbi, I accept you as superior to me in wisdom. Leo was a very great enough, extremely. You are my rabbi in wisdom, and you are my student, a student who is so loyal to have fulfilled my words, regardless of how difficult it was, you have shown a sign of a most loyal type of student in existence. This is one of the greatest tests possible for a student. Point here again shows us, teaches us that at no time should a person ever question the authority of the chief rabbi in his time. We cannot say that if we had Moshe Rabbeinu, we had the rabbis of the Gemara, we'd listen to them without questioning. Today's rabbis can't compare. Kodat tells us that each generation of Hashem gives us the leaders who we are to follow the same loyalty, the same unquestioning faith as any rabbi in any past generation. The Gemara says, when Amalek, the tribe of Amalek, came to attack the Jews, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yeshua, you go out and do battle against them. You go and do battle. I'll stay here. So he asked, what will you do? Moshe Rabbeinu said, get me a rock. I will sit on the rock and I will pray. This is my part of the battle. He sat on the rock and he had, the Torah says that as he raised his hands in prayer, when he kept his hands up, the sign of prayer, the Jews kept winning. When he lowered his hands, Amalek started to win. So what did they do? They had two people on both sides supporting his hands, keeping them up. The Gemara says, would you think for a moment that the hands of Moshe Rabbeinu were forming battle? They were winning battles and they were defeating the enemy just because his hands are up? The answer is that the hands raised upwards meant a sign for all Jews. You see these hands pointing upwards? When you go into battle, your heart should be up, thinking of Hashem. raise your eyes, your hopes to Hashem, and don't place your confidence in your own physical prowess and the power of the sword. Only in Hashem. Raise your eyes to Hashem, pray to Hashem, with this you'll be successful. As long as the hands point upwards, and the Jews follow, that means the Jews keep their hopes to Hashem, their prayers to Hashem, they will be victorious. Chas v'shalom, otherwise they won't. This was a lesson for all times. Of course, the Gemara says further, we find that at one time, when a plague broke out among the Jews, a very serious plague where many thousands died, the panic arose because of this. So Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, take a copper serpent and put it up on a high pedestal, and anybody who was stricken by the plague, let him look at this serpent, will be cured instantly. The question is, does this serpent of copper, a serpent, a snake, which is a symbol of death, a symbol of the Satan, symbol of the Melech HaMemet, and it's not even alive, it's made of copper. This serpent has the power of life and death in it. Look at this serpent, that'll bring life. Yes, there is, look up. Look up at, as long as your eyes are turned upwards, which means you are binding yourself to Hashem, tying your heart to Hashem, then if you're stricken, you'll be healed. It was placed on top, meaning the serpent is the lowest form, but placed upwards, meaning that the lowest type of person, the worst of Hashem, if he turns back towards Hashem, looking up to Hashem, he too will be cured, even though he is struck by a plague. If struck by a plague means he's struck by the angel of death himself. This was the Melech HaMemet going through and striking down the Jews. And though he's struck by the angel of death, if only he turns his eyes to Hashem, he can be saved from death. So at all times, the Gemara says, no matter what happens to a person, no matter how he is stricken, no matter what kind of yisurin he has, chas v'shalom, no matter what kind of punishment he has for any type of sins he does, all he has to do is just turn his eyes back up to Hashem, turn his heart back to Hashem, and Hashem will cure him. The test is forgotten and forgiven. Hashem accepts that person, brings him close to himself, will cure him and protect him. The Gemara says on every Jewish holiday, we say Hallel. For example, Pesach, 7 days, we say Hallel. In Eretz Yisrael, outside of Israel, we have 8 days. Shavuot, 1 day in Eretz Yisrael, 2 days in Chutz Laaretz. Sukkot, 8 days in Eretz Yisrael, and 9 days outside of Eretz Yisrael. And on Hanukkah, 8 days. Now, the question is, why don't we say Hallel on Purim? One of the reasons, one of the answers given is that we read the Megillah, which is the same as Hallel. It's praise to Hashem. But it actually is not. The Gemara says we're not too satisfied with that answer, because Hallel is still a direct praise to Hashem. Megillah is in a story form. Why don't we say Hallel? The answer the Gemara says is because we do not say Hallel for any miracle that happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. Purim happened while the Jews were in Galut. They were in Babel, Persia. They did not say Hallel for a miracle that happened outside of Eretz Yisrael. Miracle of Hanukkah happened in Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, we say the Hallel on Hanukkah and not on Purim. Yemena asks, the miracle of Pesach, miracle of Pesach happened in Egypt, which is outside of Eretz Yisrael. Why do we say Hallel on Pesach if we say the Hallel is said only for miracles that happened in Eretz Yisrael? Yemena answers simply that this law of saying Hallel only for miracles that occur in Eretz Yisrael took effect after the Jews got the Eretz Yisrael. Once they got the Eretz Yisrael, the rule became that Hallel is permissible, said only now on if a miracle that happened in Eretz Yisrael. Before they got the Eretz Yisrael, any miracle that occurred then, of course, required Hallel. And the miracle of Pesach happened before they ever got the Eretz Yisrael. Therefore, this required Hallel. Another Gemara says, how about if we say Hallel on Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, and even on so-called minor holidays, like Hanukkah, why don't we say Hallel on Rosh Hashanah, on Yom Kippur? That's a major holiday. It's a high holiday. Why don't we say Hallel then? Even it answers that this is a question that the angels in heaven asked Hashem. They asked Hashem, look at the Jews, they're celebrating a holiday that's so important, it's Holy of Holies. What kind of service is this? How come they don't say Hallel to you? Say prayer of praise to Hashem on these holy days. Hashem replied, how could they say Hallel now? Hallel is a song of praise, a song of happiness. This is a day of judgment. This is a day, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, a day when the books of heaven are open, the books of life and the books of death. A person's life is at stake. They are in such a mood, a fearful, trembling mood. How at this moment of awe and fear can they say Hallel? It's impossible. This is not a day of celebration of happiness. So at the time of fear, they cannot say Hallel praise. They must say Tefillot, prayers of pleading, begging before Hashem to be granted a life and a good fortune for the year. This is why Hallel is not said on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. The Gemara tells us that the great tzaddikim of the past were not necessarily born tzaddikim. Ben Azal stresses that it's very erroneous, very false on the person's part to think that if you see a tzaddik is because he was born as a great person, a holy soul, and therefore from his birth on, he was already destined to become a great tzaddik. A person born as an ordinary person couldn't have a chance to compete. The Gemara tells us this is very false, because we find that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who was the Nasi, chief rabbi, one of the first chief rabbis of the Jews, he was the student of Hillel HaZaken, he was the rabbi of Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol, Rabbi Yoshua that we mentioned, the great rabbis before Rabbi Akiva even. One of the Kivat, the man of Shemini Chayazal, Yochanan ben Zakkai was so great, he lived 120 years, same age as Moshe Rabbeinu. How were those 120 years divided? Were they 120 years fully, completely spent in Kiddushah Torah? Yochanan ben Zakkai, the Gemara says, is so great that he knew the languages of trees, Sheitim. He knew all the sections of Torah completely, perfectly, even those sections of the Torah that were not written yet, that came many years later, time of the later rabbis of the Gemara. So did he begin as a child prodigy, as an Eloi? The Gemara says not at all. He passed away at the age of 120 years. The first 40 years of his life, 40 years he spent as an ordinary businessman. He was in business, buying, selling, without learning practically nothing. Spent no time going to yeshiva at all. The age of 40, he first began to study Torah, first began to learn, and he spent 40 years learning, just learning Torah. He did not begin to teach at all. 40 years he spent just as a student. It's a long time to go to school. 40-year term in yeshiva. The third 40 years of his life, the age of 80 to 120, then he first spent his life, devoted his life to teaching others. So that Yochanan ben Zakkai, 120 years old, time of his passing, only 40 years of that time was spent as chief rabbi teaching others. Which means that he rose to this height, not because he was born great, not because he was great as a child, but because of his diligence, his determination to study Torah and to learn. The Gemara says his rabbi, Hillel, was very poor. You recall that he earned a few pennies and spent that money to go to a yeshiva to learn, sacrificed himself for that opportunity, and eventually 2, rose to the height of Hillel HaNasi, the chief rabbi before the Yochanan Zakkai, who was appointed as chief rabbi of Eretz Yisrael. When he came there and answered questions that the chief rabbis there could not answer, Hillel too lived the age of 120, exactly the same age as Moshe Rabbeinu too. The Rizal says, or you can go further back, the Zohar HaKadosh says, that we mentioned this, the Gemara Sukkot, that Hillel was so holy. The word Hillel is the same letters as Hallel. This holiest prayer of all, a Hallel, a praise to Hashem, is called Hallel praise. And also the word Hallel is Begimetria, Hashem's name, Ado, 65, Hallel, He is 5, Lamed, Lamed is 60. 65 is Begimetria as Hashem's name, Ado, Halof Talad Nun Yud, which means that he possessed within himself the power of the Shekhinah. So holy was he. And we say Machloket, Shammai, Hillel, this was the greatest debate, the deepest debate in Gemara, between Shammai and Hillel, the two greatest elders of the rabbis of the Jews. This is what the Gemara calls, the Nikiyabot calls a machloket, not as an argument, not as a battle of animosity, one against the other. This was a controversy, a debate for the sake of heaven, for the sake of clarifying laws of Torah. This was a very holy debate. This debate was so great, Avinu Zal says, that this machloket, Shammai and Hillel, is the peak of wisdom, that stands for the top degree of Chochmah. Therefore, the words Machloket, Shammai, Hillel, first letters of those three words are Moshe. Moshe Rabbeinu, which is the symbol of peace, not argument, peace and wisdom. So Hillel, to show the connection that Hillel lived, same age as Moshe Rabbeinu. Then too, the Gemara says, Rabbi Akiva also lived to the age of 120. Exactly at the end of 120 years, he was killed, put to death by the Romans, Roman king, for the sake of his religion. He died on Kiddush Hashem, for they combed his flesh with these iron combs. And Akiva too, the Gemara says, don't think he was born as a tzaddik, born as a child prodigy, as a genius, born with a brilliant mind. And that's why he became so great, the Akiva, who became so great, that he's the only person ever to be mentioned as a comparison of wisdom to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara says that no person ever arose who was as wise as Moshe Rabbeinu, except Rabbi Akiva. You think Rabbi Akiva, when he was born, the light shone like Moshe Rabbeinu, a light came into the room? Not at all. Not only was he born ordinary, but he was even born the son of a Ger. He had a son of a Ger, convert. He himself, until the age of 40, was practically on a level of Haaretz, Chas v'Shalom, practically illiterate. Of course, he was Shomer Torah Nitzvot. Naturally, he was religious, but he was definitely not learned. He could barely sully, barely pray. Till the age of 40, he did not begin to study Torah as a regular yeshiva student today. At the age of 40, he first then married the daughter of Kalba Savua, and she encouraged him to leave home and go to the yeshiva of Yavna. Yeshiva in Yavna is Tiberias, where the chief rabbis were. There he spent 24 years, and he came back as the chief rabbi of the world, the Akiva. But starting at the age of 40, though, this the Gemara brings to us, tell us, that no person should ever be discouraged if he finds that his mind is dull, if he finds that he thinks he's too old to start learning Torah. No person is too old. At no time is a person ever too old. A person wants to study Torah. The Torah is waiting for this person with open arms. You won't find the Torah locked up somewhere. The Torah is open and waiting. Any person who wants to study Torah has the same opportunity as the next one. that he goes at it with a full heart